News 101.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
I'm Tim Walz, and I'm running for Congress in Minnesota's 1st Congressional District. I'm a retired command sergeant major.
Only he is not a retired command sergeant major. That guy has been calling himself retired command sergeant major Tim Walz for literally years, and he's not. He even printed up challenge coins. Yeah, I collect challenge coins, so I'm familiar with them. Fact is, in the military, they have challenge coins that represent rank. They represent units. They represent all of that. And member of Congress Tim Walz had special challenge coins made up that depicted him as a retired command sergeant major. He is not. And the only question now is, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as the VP nominee of the Democrat Party over his stolen valor crimes? And if you think I'm exaggerating that, it is literally a federal misdemeanor to commit the crime of stolen valor, which is described in the law as either pretending that you did military service when you did not, or exaggerating your rank or accomplishments in the United States military. It is a federal misdemeanor crime. You can go to prison for 6 months for committing it. Well, I'd say that Tim Walz has been committing it for a good long time. He retired after 24 years of National Guard service as a staff sergeant, considerably below the rank of command sergeant major. And we've raised this issue over the last week or so since Kamala Harris, the accidental presidential candidate, chose Tim Walz as her running mate because she couldn't choose that Jewish guy from Philadelphia. That wouldn't work with the left end of the Democrat Party, which is an ugly part of Democrat history to begin with. So she chose an old white guy, Tim Walz, except you've got problems, Tim Walz. Let's talk about some history, and I want to remind you of two names you may have never heard of, and I want to do that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to have you with me on the Radio Northwest Network. We do our best to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk radio, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 866-HEY-LARS, and if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, the two names that you may or may not remember are Member of Congress Wes Cooley and Missouri U.S. Senator Thomas Eagleton. Now, the second one is going to be a tougher one to remember. One of them lied overtly and repeatedly about his military record. He ended up trying to run for re-election. He ran unopposed for Congress and got less than half of the votes, and then he got the message. The voters wanted him out, and he quit running for re-election. He did not quit the Congress. He finished out his term, and he went away. He later went to prison for some financial crimes, but that's another story. The other was a Democrat, and this one is the one that seems to remind me the most of Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota. His name, U.S. Senator Thomas Eagleton from Missouri. He was a vice presidential candidate for just 18 days, but questions about his background forced him to quit. And I suspect the same is going to end up being true of Governor Tim Walz. And if you say, Lars, there's only about 90 days till Election Day, and there's far less than that before the ballots go out to the voters. They can't dump a VP candidate at this point. Well, you may think that, but tell me this. Can you keep somebody on the ticket who has committed a crime that is so offensive to so many veterans out there? It's amazing to me that the Democrats would even have the temerity to do that. But first, let me tell you a bit. I want to remind you who Wes Cooley was, because back in those days, I was a reporter, and I was the one of the people who walked up to Wes Cooley in the middle of a press conference and said, did you lie about your voter registration? And he said, no, I did not. And I said, well, here's the piece of paper on which you lied. And I showed him the paper. That was part of what brought Wes Cooley down. A lot of other reporters played a role in that. I wasn't even the major one. But the fact is, that guy gives me the creeps. And he was a Republican. Now, here's the difference. When you have Democrats who do things that are wrong, the mainstream media generally tends to cover it up. And they're doing just that with Tim Walz right now. Everybody from the Washington Post to the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, they're doing their best to cover up for Tim Walz because they know he's committed the crime of stolen valor, but they don't want to admit it because that's going to make the current disastrous candidacy of Kamala Harris get even worse. But back to Cooley. Cooley lied about his military service. He had been in the Army. He had served in the Army. He'd never left the United States of America. And yet in the voter's pamphlet, he said that he was in Special Forces Korea. Now, he could have just said, I'm a veteran. I served in the military. I put on the uniform, and people probably would have thought well with him, of him. But he was, according to his friends and family members, an inveterate liar, a guy who, you know, would tell all kinds of lies about all kinds of things. In 1996, so quite a long time ago, he was pressured to resign. He stayed in the Republican primary, got less than half the vote, even though he was running unopposed, and then he pulled out of the race, gave up, simply served out the remaining months of his term in Congress, and he was gone. And then there was Tom Eagleton. Now, Eagleton was an interesting candidate, chosen by George McGovern as his vice presidential pick, except the campaign got all kinds of information about some things in Eagleton's background. He had apparently been hospitalized for depression. The public did not know that. He had undergone electroshock therapy. And the way that people saw it at the time, I'll read one quote. This was the height of the Cold War. And the key here wasn't how do we feel about mental illness or therapy. The key was his finger could be on the button, meaning finger on the button began to characterize the McGovern campaign. It didn't work well, and Eagleton was replaced as a vice presidential candidate. I might mention that George McGovern went on to lose 49 of the 50 states, and he only got about 37% of the vote. And he obviously lost. Richard Nixon won instead. And that was even though Eagleton came forward and gave this rather tearful explanation. I've been hospitalized for nervous exhaustion and fatigue. I drove myself too hard. And yes, I took electroshock therapy. That didn't do any good. And in this case, I don't think it's going to do any good that Tim Walz has lied about his military service. Now, we've had other liars about their military service. We've had Dick Blumenthal of Connecticut, Democrat, and the media doesn't seem to have a problem with that. There are others who have lied about their service or claimed service. And, of course, you had John Kerry, who famously came back from Vietnam and described all of his fellow service members as war criminals on a daily basis. And he gave that testimony to the United States Congress. Of course, the Democrats treat John Kerry very, very well. He never got to be president, but he went on to other top positions in the federal government. The question now is, and we've made it today's Daily X poll, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Coming up in just a moment, I got to give a tip of the hat to Sherlock Holmes, but why are individual Democrats in America maintaining their silence about the crazy stuff that's going on in the Democrat Party? That's next. With me on the phone today.
People always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper or mainstream media bias.
With a hat tip to Sherlock Holmes, have you noticed the dog that didn't bark? American members of the Democrat Party are maintaining an amazing silence. They've been quiet as to, well, the coronation of Kamala Harris as their nominee without getting a single citizen vote. She didn't get a vote in 2020 either when she ran for president, and she didn't get any votes this year. That yet there she is, the choice of a Democrat Party that doesn't even meet for its convention and delegate vote for another week. They're silent about the choice of Tim Walz as their vice presidential candidate, a man who lied about his military service, apparently committed the federal crime of stolen valor, left his own National Guard unit without a leader when they deployed to Iraq. He was busy running for Congress, and once he got there, he fabricated a history of his rank, one he didn't hold, and combat under fire, which never happened. The legacy media usually loves to out the lies of politicians, unless, of course, they're Democrats. And now Kamala Harris, who's been avoiding reporter questions like the plague because she's afraid to be connected to her toxic positions of the past on everything from the border to Medicare. This weekend, she stole Donald Trump's idea of not taxing tips. And Joe Biden says, yeah, we're in favor with that, of that. Only one problem. The Harris-Biden IRS just got $80 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act to crack down on tip income. And by the way, Kamala Harris cast the deciding vote on passing that piece of legislation. Try explaining that, Kamala, if you're ever actually going to talk to reporters again. Now, if she'd only adopt Donald Trump's policies on our southern border. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to award today's Daily Grill to feckless Ted Wheeler, the lame duck mayor of Portland. I want to ask him this question. He hasn't been willing to do an interview in a long, long time, but we can get him to come on maybe for an exit interview as he leaves office in a few months. What exactly did the taxpayers get from the raw deal that was announced last week where the city of Portland is going to buy the Blazers home arena? The downstream costs of buying MoDA are huge. First of all, the city immediately loses $1.2 million in annual property taxes. That's bad. And then they lose unquestioned millions of dollars paying half the renovation costs. And nobody knows what the renovation costs are going to be, but they're likely to be huge. So we're going to pay half of that because now the city of Portland owns the arena. And oh, by the way, all leverage over the Trailblazers is lost when they renegotiate. They have promised to stay in Portland for at least another 5 years. The problem is they, after that, they may leave. And here's why they lose the leverage. Because if they still own the arena and they threaten to leave, they'd be telling the city, we're going to leave. We'll leave the MoDA Center empty. And then good luck trying to sell an arena. And both the Blazers and the MoDA were owned by the Paul Allen Estate. The problem is they're not owned by the Allen Estate anymore. And the end result of that is going to be that they're going to be trying to sell an empty building. That would be a problem for the Blazers. Now it's going to be a problem for taxpayers in Portland. So now if they threaten to leave Portlandia, then Portlandia gets stuck with an empty building, same as Memorial Coliseum. So the Blazers can play hardball with their brand new landlord, the city of Portland, on how much rent they have to pay. Only a Stanford-Harvard trust fund multimillionaire like Ted Wheeler could see this as a good deal for citizens. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more, is from Greg in Malott, Washington. Hey, Lars, it's the economy, stupid, is one of the few things that Gollum, James Carville, got right in his life. With price hikes weekly at the grocery store, it's getting hard to feed the kids anywhere near the same as we did 4 years ago. With stupid issues like stolen valor, I'm a veteran and I'm pissed off by it, he writes. I hope the message changes to resonate with Americans and what the real problems are. I'm retired and working again to afford living, raising three grandkids, and I don't want to rely on the government to fix anything because whatever they do gets corrupted. If government stopped fixing so much, America would be in great shape again. Signed, Greg in Malott. Now let's go to your calls. Joel, can you put Chuck up? We got a little computer failure, but I want to hear Chuck. Chuck, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
I think you should be ashamed of yourself.
Tell me why.
You really should be. Well, you get it all wrong. You stated that Wirtz or whatever his name is got out as an E6. That's not true.
I didn't say he got out as an E6. He claims and has claimed
yeah,
for
did.
You. Hold on.
Yeah, did. In fact, I sent you an email that day with saying it's the staff sergeant rank.
No, hold on. I said he got out and has claimed for years to be a command sergeant major. That's an E9. He instead retired as a staff sergeant, which is an E6.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. And
I'm
you know
wrong.
What? I'm going to say this. Yeah, you are. You wouldn't know the difference between a senior NCO and a junior NCO if your life depended on it.
Why would you say that?
Well, because, look, you don't
I've
know
met
what you're
command sergeant.
About.
I've met staff sergeants and gunnery sergeants. So
what's
what?
The difference
what?
Between a staff sergeant
Why is,
and a sergeant major?
I'm not, number one, I'm not running for vice president. Tim Walz is.
One,
I didn't, hold on, Chuck.
Chuck. You shouldn't call me.
I didn't claim to be a command sergeant major retired. Tim Walz did. What, you know, this is pretty typical of somebody who calls in as a naysayer. Here's the point. Tim Walz is running for vice president. He was chosen by the Democrat Party and Kamala Harris. I don't know how much choice Harris actually had in the matter, but they say that he is her choice. So the question is he a retired command sergeant major, as he has said so on his governor's biography as a member of Congress? We played a soundbite at the very beginning of the hour of him saying, I'm Tim Walz, retired command sergeant major running for the United States Congress. That was from his announcement when he ran for Congress and he won. He claimed to be a command sergeant major. He has made that claim as a congressional candidate, as a member of Congress, and then as a vice presidential candidate. On Friday afternoon, the Harris campaign changed its website. They had been referring to Tim Walz as a retired command sergeant major. They then made a change to that because they realized he was being called out as claiming a rank that he did not retire at. Did he serve for a few months as a command sergeant major? He did, because he was in a program to become a command sergeant major. And why didn't he finish that program? Because his unit was notified, you're being deployed to Iraq. He had plans to run for the United States Congress at the time, and he said, I'm not going to be deployed to Iraq, so he quit early. His commitment to the U.S. military was 6 years, which he signed in September of 2001, 1 week after the terrorist attacks. He gave up 2 years early and left the military and retired as a staff sergeant. So, Chuck, we've been stating this the right way all the way through. Tim Walz has claimed to be something he is not, and that is the crime of stolen valor.
The Lars Larson Show. Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com, and consider this. There was an attempt on Friday, and I would even call it a stealth attempt, to sabotage the will of the people of the state of Washington. Hundreds of thousands of people signed initiatives. They were initiatives to the legislature. If the legislature did not consider them and did not make them law, then they go automatically to the ballot. And yet, there was, and I'll call it a stealth effort, and I'll see if Hallie Balch agrees with me. She is director of communications for the group Let's Go Washington that got those measures on the ballot. And on Friday afternoon, strangely enough, the Washington State Supreme Court, which I always assume is going to be political all day long, decided to do the right thing. And they said, no, we're going to leave these on the ballot. Hallie, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me.
Did the liberals launch a secret effort to try and torpedo these voter initiatives and keep the information away from the very groups that had put them on the ballot?
Absolutely. This has been a longstanding effort from Defend Washington, Nick Hanauer, SEIU, WEA, basically any lobbying group you can think of on the far left to keep the people's voices off of the ballot in November and make sure that 1.2 million people who signed the initiatives to get them qualified for November's ballot were not heard. They filed this suit in the beginning of the year, January 2024, and Attorney General Bob Ferguson has been saying it's public record. It's available for anybody to see. But truthfully, who's scouring the Washington State Supreme Court website docket to see if their name is possibly mentioned, on their website, to find out if they're going to be in court for something?
See, I think
Brian
this is the part I want people to understand. The players involved are Let's Go Washington, got the measures on the ballot. Defend Washington, which, as you said, is Hanauer and company. He's been on the show, but a long, long time ago. He wants to sabotage them. Then you've got Ferguson, who's currently the attorney general but running for governor. And I'd ask you this. Do you think Ferguson wants those measures on the ballot?
You know, I'll tell you explicitly, he does not want them on the ballot. He has said it himself that he doesn't support them and that he'll do everything that he can to dismantle them if they are to pass.
I just want people to understand how this works then. The job of Bob Ferguson as attorney general is that if there are measures that are going on the ballot, it is his job to defend the state of Washington by going to court and saying, no, these measures were properly certified for the ballot, even though I don't like them, and they need to go on the ballot. Except as attorney general, he essentially tried to throw the game. Do you think that's a fair conclusion, that because he didn't want them on the ballot, even though his job was to defend them being on the ballot, he basically kept it a secret from people like Let's Go Washington, your group, so that you'd never know that there was a challenge that had been launched?
Exactly. If you're asking any lawyer, anybody in the law profession or field, they'll tell you that it's common sense to just notify a person if they're being named. Brian Haywood was named explicitly in the suit, and Let's Go Washington, our organization, we were also named in the suit. So the common practice here is just to have a decency notification, just to say, hey, your name was brought up in this suit, and, you know, so far this the lawsuit is against the Secretary of State, so there's no legal action that you need to take, but we want to keep you abreast of the situation just because you're named in it, and it could potentially, you know, impact the will of 1.2 million voters in Washington State. We strongly believe that Bob was using his political affiliation and his reasoning behind not supporting the initiative to keep us out of the loop in this case.
Because his job was to defend the suit, but in reality, he wanted the suit to actually win and knock them off the ballot. And even if you're not named in it, it's the Secretary of State that's named, Let's Go Washington and other affiliated groups could have gone to court with friend of the court briefs to defend keeping the initiatives on the ballot. And you probably would have. When did your group actually learn of this suit?
So we didn't find out about the suit until Friday afternoon, 2 hours before the ruling was to be come to by the Washington State Supreme Court. So we had no time to get down there. We had no time to obviously get anybody there or have an understanding of what was going on. We basically were just waiting for the results to come out and doing our best to keep on top of it. It was all done in the dead of night and very secretly behind the backs of Washington voters.
I mean, because on one hand, Hallie, I'll admit to you, I want all these measures on the ballot and I want them to pass. So there's my dog in the fight. I want some reporters. I was disclosed to my audience if I got a dog in the fight, you know, a bias one way or the other, because I think that's the honest way to do business. I want some reporters to go to Bob Ferguson, who's been invited to come on this show any number of times. He has never agreed to be questioned on this show. I'd like them to ask him, did you deliberately try to throw this case by not informing people? And if so, why should people trust you to be governor of the state if you're willing to use your position to advantage your side of the aisle, whether it's liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, or in this case, Let's Go Washington versus Defend Washington? And Defend Washington, all Hanauer and company, and I'll invite Hanauer to come on, all Hanauer and company want is they want the carbon tax to stay in place, $2 billion out of the taxpayers' pockets for no good reason. They want the capital gains tax to stay in place. That's hurting the state. They want to keep people from opting out of WAH cares. They want all that. And the fourth initiative, which was actually sponsored not by your group, but by the BIA, Business Industry Association, would knock out this stupid ban on natural gas in new construction. And I want that one to pass as well. And I'd like Ferguson to explain, did you deliberately try to throw this case? I mean, Hallie, I'll compare this to something that happened in Oregon a few years ago, before the Supreme Court's decision on gay marriage. The public had a vote on whether or not to have gay marriage. And the public said loudly, no, we don't want gay marriage. And the job of the attorney general at the time was to defend the existing law passed by the voters. And what did Ellen Rosenblum do, attorney general? She just said, I refuse to defend it, because she was substituting her own personal politics for what the state and its voters wanted. I think that's very comparable to what Bob Ferguson just did by trying to torpedo your initiatives and the one from the BIA. What do you think?
Yeah, Bob Ferguson has been upfront, like I said, with his public disdain for the initiative. He clearly is afraid of the voice of the people, because he understands that they don't agree with the beliefs that he has staked his life and his reputation on. And it's further complicated by the fact that he's running for governor, right? So he's got to take these strong stances on things to make people think that he is running our state the way that it needs to be run. It's just not true. And it's interesting to note that Defend Washington and Nick Hanauer and all of his pals are some of the biggest donors of, his campaign and the campaign to take down the initiatives and the voice of the people. So they're obviously also afraid of Washington voters. So it just does feel like a big ploy against the state to kind of silence the will of what 1.2 million people have said they want to see on the ballot. So we're doing our best to make sure that people know there is an alternative. We are still working toward those ballots being on, those initiatives being on November's ballots. And we're just encouraging people to vote yes to Payless this November, because our voices deserve to be heard.
Hallie, aren't we literally like 6 weeks from the ballots going out to the voters?
That's the thing.
I want people to think about, if you're even thinking, oh, I want to vote Bob Ferguson, think about the sleazy, corrupt way of approaching this, that as attorney general, he would deliberately try to throw voter-approved, voter-signed initiatives off the ballot so the people of Washington won't even get a chance to vote on them one way or the other, whichever way you plan to vote. Carbon tax, capital gains tax, WAH cares opt-out, and the ban on natural gas. Bob Ferguson doesn't want the people to have a say. And even if you think, oh, he's a great candidate, there are clearly a bunch of people are going to vote for him, I want you to consider that. Would you put such a sleazy character in the governor's mansion in Olympia? Hallie Balch is the communications director. Hallie, thanks very much for Let's Go Washington. I'll be glad to take naysayers on that one. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. We'll talk about a gender-neutral bathroom and a $4 million lawsuit against the Northwest School District.
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. I want to make a correction, and I did say staff sergeant. I should have said master sergeant. Here's the bottom line. Tim Walz retired as a master sergeant. He did not retire as a command sergeant major, which is one rank above that, E9. The fact that he is claiming a rank that he did not hold at retirement means that for years he has put out challenge coins, claimed that rank, Command Sergeant Major, when he ran for Congress, claimed that rank in his governor's biography until recently in the state of Minnesota. It read, retired Command Sergeant Major. He is not that. Now, what is stolen valor? If you look up the federal law, and we've talked about stolen valor on this show for literally years. We've talked to Terrence Hoy, who is a retired military, who has chased cases of stolen valor. Usually, it's somebody who never was in the military but claimed they were in the military, and as a result, they sold more insurance or sold more real estate. In other words, they did it for the rankest of motives, to be able to get advantage for themselves. What did Tim Walz do? Well, he could have simply said, I came out as a sergeant major. No, you didn't. Command sergeant major is E9. That's the upper rank. He claimed that title. He didn't hold that title. He, in fact, retired below that. Would it have made a big difference to anybody if he had simply said what he actually retired at? No, it wouldn't. And the bigger issue, and I've brought this up before, is that he lied to the voters. He said, well, I've served in action. He did not. He was deployed to Italy, tactical baguettes or tactical spaghetti, whatever it was. He was doing an important job in the National Guard, providing service to people who were in war zones. He was not. And yet, over the years, he's allowed people like Nancy Pelosi and others to sing his praises as somebody who went out and actually served under fire. He did not. He was asked to deploy to Iraq. When he found out he was being deployed to Iraq, he quit the National Guard. He had made a commitment to go to the Command Sergeant Major Academy to finish that course of training and to achieve that rank. He didn't finish. And why did he quit early? He quit in May of 2005. His commitment was through September of 2007. He made a six-year commitment in 2001 after the terrorist attacks on the United States of America. That's admirable. Then why did he quit early? He didn't quit when he was deployed to Italy. He did quit when he was about to be deployed to Iraq. Now, that's an important issue to bring up to the voters. I'd like to see Governor Tim Walz speak about that. I'd like him to be honest about that. I made the mistake of referring to Staff Sergeant. He actually finished out one rank higher and one rank below Command Sergeant Major. And for the life of me, I don't understand why somebody who's already done proud military service, 24 years in the National Guard, he had finished his 20 and actually retired, and then came back after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, reenlisted in September of 2001, 8 days, 7 days after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. That's admirable. But quitting when your unit is about to be deployed to Iraq, and quitting because in January of that year, he'd already filed the paperwork to begin running for the United States Congress. You can run for the U.S. Congress, but if you say to run for the Congress, it will be inconvenient if I'm deployed. His unit was deployed to Iraq for 17 months. That would have done more than a little damage to his efforts to run for Congress. He apparently wanted to run for Congress. I apologize for the error in saying Staff Sergeant instead of Master Sergeant. But the point is, he did not retire as a Command Sergeant Major. He has claimed that he did. And I'll tell you something. There's a reason that the United States Congress made it a crime to either pretend that you've been in the military when you have not, or to pretend a rank that you did not achieve. Tim Walz has done that. So the question is, will voters still vote for him? I reminded you that Thomas Eagleton was running as a vice presidential candidate for all of 18 days. And the Democrat Party was forced to dump him. Didn't do him much good because he was replaced by Sergeant Shriver, a member of the Kennedy family. And they lost 49 of the 50 states. And they lost about 60%+ of the vote. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's start with Ken. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, Lars, we must remember that Hillary Clinton is also a liar in that she said she went to Iraq. She was under fire when she got off of the helicopter.
Oh, no, Bosnia.
Or Bosnia, Bosnia. But she lied.
Yes, she did. But she wasn't in the military, but you're right, she did lie.
She did lie. Helicopter pilot has come out and said so. She was never under fire. She was in a secured landing zone.
Yep. In fact, when she was in the landing zone, supposedly under fire with 50 caliber rounds flying over her head, she was greeted by a little girl who had an arm full of flowers, which is a sweet thing for the little girl to do. I don't know if she realized who she was handing the flowers to, one of the most corrupt politicians that America's ever seen. But you're right. Hillary Clinton came back, made that claim that as they were getting off the plane, they were under fire. And there were a number of people who said, well, if you'd been under fire, that airplane would have waved off. They would have waved off the landing. But Hillary wanted to enhance what she was saying. And a bunch of reporters, including reporters who were along to observe what was going on, simply said, no, That didn't happen. She lied about it. We don't like lying politicians. And by the way, Ken, we should be just as tough on Republicans and conservatives who lie as people like Hillary Clinton and Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota. He was governor of Minnesota. He was not a command sergeant major.
The Lars Larson Show.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you and to invite you to the conversation. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Naysayers go to the head of the line. And our ex-poll today, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? You can find that at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. And a welcome to DA, former DA, Josh Marquis. Josh, welcome back to the program. There's a lot going on in the election that's upcoming. Welcome.
There is. And there are some things that the mainstream media has not been talking about that need some discussion.
Okay. Where do you want to start? You want to start with Shamia Fagan, because that's real news. Because people might remember she was the Secretary of State. She did take stacks of money, about $10,000 a month, from a weed retailer in the Northwest, La Moda. And $10,000 a month is about 50% above the actual paycheck of Secretary of State. So putting it in context, I just wanted to put it that way, because if the Secretary of State made $50,000 a month and she got a $500 bribe, it might not sound like much. When you're getting a bribe that's almost 50% bigger than your paycheck as Secretary of State, you might actually be influenced by it, don't you think?
Well, particularly because the Secretary of State under Oregon law has a great deal to do with reporting requirements. And Oregon, frankly, is turning into sort of the West Coast version of New Jersey or Louisiana. You know, recently, New Jersey's most recent Democratic Senator, Bob Menendez, is going to federal prison. The only other U.S. senator in our lifetime that's gone to prison was the last senator, Democratic senator from New Jersey, a guy named Harrison back in the 1970s. But, you know, Oregon's always had a reputation they're very proud of for being super clean. But there's nothing clean about it. Turns out that, Oregon's campaign finance laws, which are enforced, by the way, by the Secretary of State's office, allow for cash contributions. And in the very, very dirty scandal that has spilled all over my party, the Democratic Party, because of this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, or maybe I'm mixing up.
And Nishad Singh, his right-hand bag man, who actually delivered
who was quoted in the Oregonian as thinking this whole thing was just terribly funny. He thought it was just hilarious that he really had no idea where this $500,000 contribution that was apparently solicited by Ron Wyden. And I'm not sure if the Democratic Party, I guess they had to really rob Peter and pay Paul to get to scrape the money to get it back. But in any event, the larger issue has been, well, wait a minute, Shamia Fagan was a relatively new state senator who was coming up in Oregon politics very fast and was clearly supposed to be the new great hope for the Democratic Party. And rather quickly, she went down in flames, and she disclosed that she had been getting paid basically off the books. I mean, it would be like, and in Oregon, you can't do that. That's probably a crime called official misconduct. When you're an elected official, which I was for 25 years, I had to report any income whatsoever. And I got, for example, I made some money speaking, and I wrote a chapter in a book. Every bit of that had to be reported, because voters and citizens have a right to know if their elected officials are literally on the pad from somebody else. Yep. Now, this all happened pretty fast. So what has not been reported, which I think is fascinating, is Fagan was a lawyer before she went into the legislature.
Yep.
And she went into what we call inactive status. That's where basically she took herself, doesn't have to make the kind of reporting that those of us who are actively, back in 2020 when she was still in office. Well, it turns out that she applied for reinstatement in 2023, which is now a year and a half ago. And I'm trying to find out, well, what happened? She has not been readmitted to the bar. And the bar is a quasi-public organization. It's a little bit weird. They kind of report to the public, but those of us who are members supposedly run it and not the public. But it's a really serious question. Here we had the person who was next in line to be governor, and that's not a specious thing. I mean, Kate Brown became governor because all of a sudden John Kitzhaber couldn't. So, and clearly the current governor, Tina Kotek, has shown some really bad judgment. We don't know if it's going to end up with the next Secretary of State, ending up taking over the governorship. It's happened several times in your and my lifetime here in Oregon.
Well, so let me go back to Fagan, though. When you become inactive as a lawyer, and she apparently went into that status voluntarily, but then she goes off to Seattle, she's working for a law firm, but not technically as a lawyer, although I guess that's a bit fungible, or can be a bit fungible as well, where you say, well, you're at a law firm, but you're not officially a lawyer, so you can't work as a lawyer, you're working as some kind of assistant. You could mess around with that as well. But tell me, if you've done something like what she did, take stacks of cash from a state-regulated industry, and that's Lamoda in the weed business, and then you say, well, now I'd like to go back to being a lawyer again, do they consider that? Isn't that a crime of moral turpitude?
Well, yes, and beyond that, the application process for the bar is correctly pretty onerous. They want to know not just if you've been convicted of a crime. They want to know, I'll give you an example. I've been through this process more than once. Have you ever bounced a bad check? Have you ever been detained by the police? Have you ever been involved in a lawsuit of any kind? So the point being that when you're given the public trust by being licensed as an attorney, the bar has a duty, which they've accepted, to look into the moral fitness of someone, not just whether they're a convicted criminal or not. Fagan has not been charged with a crime yet.
Nope.
And I don't know if she will be. I mean, that's up to the feds.
Democrats run the AG's office, what is the likelihood of her being charged with a crime?
Well, in fairness, when you're talking about the U.S. Justice Department,
No, not the U.S. I'm talking about the State Department of Justice.
The Oregon Department of Justice has already passed on this. They're not going to do anything. Clearly not with Ellen Rosenblum as Attorney General. And it's important to note one thing. Normally, district attorneys make these kind of calls. There's one exception in Oregon. Under Oregon law, only the Attorney General can bring election crime charges, and only the Secretary of State can investigate them. It's a special law that's unique to Oregon.
So we've got a crime. We've got potentially criminal activity committed by a Democrat to be investigated by a Democrat Secretary of State, and the charging decision made by a Democrat Attorney General. What's the likelihood?
In past decades, I don't think it would have mattered if Hardy Myers had been the Attorney General, or frankly John Kroger, or a couple other people. But unfortunately, the Attorney General's Office of Oregon has become hyper-political, and I think at this point the chances of state charges flowing out of this are non-existent. The only question is, are the feds going to do something?
And under the Biden DOJ, I would suspect they will not. That's former DA Josh Marquis. By the way, L.A. got hit by a 4.5 earthquake just now. Yeah, apparently strong enough to feel it. No reports of damage or injuries. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. When it comes to...
Another strong take from President Biden on AI and the weather.
Helping web telescope. My God, what is this?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Absolutely. Look, this is something that the president supports. He supports eliminating taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
That is Karine Jean-Pierre, the mouthpiece for Joe Biden as long as he remains president of the United States. And she's saying, of course, the president is in favor of not taxing tip income as long as you're part of a service industry or a hospitality worker. Now, I want to tell you why that is so very, very strange and why it relates to the presidential campaign that's going on right now. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and welcome to the best conversation in talk journalism. If you want to join that conversation, we make it easy at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our poll on X. Today's question has to do with Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, now the vice presidential running mate of Kamala Harris. Should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? Let me point out the details here. Number one, Tim Walz, as governor of Minnesota, as a member of Congress, and now as a vice presidential nominee, has claimed to be a retired command sergeant major from the Army National Guard, where he served for 24 years before quitting right before his unit was being deployed to Iraq. His fellow service members didn't think much of that. He left them without a senior non-commissioned officer, NCO, in charge of the 125th Artillery, which is where Tim Walz served at the end of his career. He then dropped out before the end of his commitment to the U.S. military because he was in the middle of running for the United States Congress. He served in the Congress from 07 on, so he didn't vote on the stolen valor law. But there's a law on the books, and what it says is, if you exaggerate your military service, if you exaggerate your military service, or if you claim to have served in the U.S. military when in fact you did not, then you've got a problem that you are going to be, you're going to be held stolen valor. And the law says that if you do that, you can be punished by as much as 6 months in prison. It is a federal misdemeanor crime. So, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? And yes, have we had Democrats drop out as VP nominees before? Yeah, we have. It doesn't happen often, but it has happened before. But let me get back to the tips. Here's what's so weird about this. KJP today, Karine Jean-Pierre, saying that President Biden believes in not taxing tip income for hospitality and service workers. Well, you might say, well, gosh, didn't Kamala Harris just make an announcement about that? Yes, she did. But what the mainstream media did not cover nearly as much is the fact that more than two months ago now, President Donald Trump, as a candidate, proposed to stop taxing all tip income. I want to play you two sound bites side by side. One is President Trump 2 months ago, June the 9th, announcing that when he becomes president, he plans to end all income taxes on tip income. And then Harris making the same announcement a couple of days ago, but 2 months after Trump did it.
Because when I get to office, we are going to not charge taxes on tips, people making tips.
And eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Yeah, so Kamala Harris, copycat Kamala, simply decided to do the same thing. Now, in some ways, I should be thankful for this because that means that Kamala Harris believes that Donald Trump's plan is a good one and she's adopted. It's kind of, it's a compliment in some ways. But consider this. Kamala Harris also played a role in the Biden administration because she is the tiebreaker when it comes to ties in the United States Senate. And just a couple of years ago, she was the tie-breaking vote, which means that she made the tie-breaking vote on what's called the Inflation Reduction Act. It was badly named. It had nothing to do with reducing inflation, but that's exactly what she did. She voted, and that gave the IRS an extra $80 billion. Now, the official story from the IRS is They needed $80 billion to hire about 87,000 additional IRS agents, and their public story was, we're going to use those 87,000 agents to go after all the millionaires and billionaires in America. And the answer is, you couldn't possibly put those 87,000 workers to work on that. But what they also did, here's what the IRS did. Shortly after that, the IRS said, to ensure compliance, employers, we want them to participate in a tip reporting program. But the IRS then said, we're going to replace existing programs to track tip income. This is under Joe Biden, with a far more far-reaching and invasive program that would require employers to use their point of sale systems to record all sales subject to tipping. Employers in the program would then be required to use those electronically recorded transactions to create detailed annual employee tipping reports for the IRS. And yet today, just a couple of days ago over the weekend, Kamala Harris comes out and says, we don't want to collect any income taxes at all on tip income. And the White House quickly follows behind Kamala Harris and says, yes, the president is in favor of ending all taxation on all tip income for service and hospitality workers. You say, hold on, there's a problem here. The Biden administration gets $80 billion to hire 87,000 new IRS agents, and then announces that it's going to double down on tracking down tip income, not on millionaires and billionaires, unless somewhere in America there's a millionaire or a billionaire who's waiting tables or doing some other kind of tip income type job. I don't think that's very likely. No, what's happening is Kamala Harris is becoming desperate. She's not answering questions from most reporters. She went 18 days up to last Friday without talking to reporters on the record, not once in 18 days. Then Friday afternoon, she talked to a couple of reporters for a few minutes, and she broke that 18-day streak. Even today, she's not spending any time. She gives plenty of speeches. She shows up at rallies. She gets on and off Air Force Two. She flies in on the official government plane for the Vice President of the United States. She's running for president, but she does not talk to reporters. Now, what's the problem with that? They would be able to ask her, why is it that today you're saying we shouldn't collect any income taxes on people's tip income, but just a couple of years ago, you voted for the Inflation Reduction Act to give the IRS another $80 billion to hire 87,000 new agents, and you doubled down and said, we're going to require all employers who have employees who might get a tip to use their point of sale system to track all purchases that might have resulted in a tip. So the IRS, under Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris in the tie-breaking vote in the Senate, and Joe Biden, in his spokesperson's words today, say they are against taxing tip income. Donald Trump, 2 months ago, said, put me back in office, and we will pursue the legislation to make sure that we don't collect income taxes on tips. It turns out the Democrats saw that, and they said, that's very, very popular. We need to copy that idea. The problem is, the record shows the Biden administration and Kamala Harris have doubled down on making the IRS go out and chase down all the taxes on all the tips paid to workers, and now they claim they're against taxing tips. You tell me who you'd believe. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
The upcoming American elections promise some provocative politics, but be forewarned, the Green Agenda may lead to some extreme rhetoric.
Die, gas pumper!
So prepare yourself by listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Out their voices and gave up our choices. Do we have the strength to move on? Do we have the strength to move on?
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. And if you didn't recognize that voice, well, then you're not maybe from my era, but that is the voice of Pat Boone. And I would have called him the pride of Jacksonville, Florida, except I get the impression, Mr. Boone, welcome to the show, that you didn't spend as much time at Jacksonville as you did in Nashville from a very early age. Welcome to the program, sir.
Well,
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. I was born in Jacksonville. 40 years later, they gave me the key to the city. The mayor, Hans, I've forgotten his last name, but anyway, he gave me the key to the city 40 years later. When I was born, it was on the birth certificate to Margaret Virginia Richard Boone, boy normal. I didn't have a name yet, but I got the name later. But I'm glad it was obvious that I was a boy. I was grateful for that. Anyway,
well, yeah, these days you wouldn't know, would you?
Well, it's up. It's always up for debate. You know, it's up to your current election, today's election.
I got to say, anyway, and you had, when they decided to give you a name, they gave you a handful. Patrick Charles Eugene Boone. I mean, my dad had two middle names, but I very rarely run into people with two middle names these days.
Well, that's another thing. I was only given the name Charles Eugene Boone because my parents had expected a girl, and they'd been calling me Patricia or Pat till I was born, and that's why I say I'm glad it was obvious when they took a look. They said, wait a minute, this is not a girl. And then they gave me my two grandfathers' names, Charles and Eugene, and kept on calling me Pat anyway. That's just how my mama was. She'd already picked the name Pat. And so I grew up and performed and have been Pat Boone ever since. However, when I go anyplace out of the country, or my driver's license has to have Charles Eugene on it as well as Pat. But I'm Pat, but I'm also Charles and also Eugene.
All three. And by the way, singer, actor, TV personality, composer, you're from that era when you had to have a bunch of different skills to be able to do what you did. And you're from that multi-talented era. These days, you don't find a whole lot of people in Hollywood or in music who have all those different skills, do you?
Well, right. I mean, some people are just actors or some people just singers, and they have hobbies. But in my case, I mean, if I start detailing all the things that I have been privileged to do, like recording more songs than any artist in history, Frank Sinatra did 1,500, Bing Crosby 2,000. I've recorded 3,700 separate songs in a number of genres. But then I've also written a number of best-selling books. I've done parts of 5 movies in the last 3 months.
3 months? You've been busy.
I really have. I played Thomas Jefferson in a film coming up on the Louisiana Purchase. I'm in the new Reagan film coming out, premiering at Grauman's Chinese this the 20th. And it's a surprise part because I'm playing the part of another guy, and a young actor plays me in the in a scene that did happen when Reagan was governor, and a spiritual prophecy came through a friend of mine named George Otis. I happened to be there, and that's why I have somebody else to play me in the film, but I play the guy through whom the prophecy came as we were in a circle of prayer, and this different voice. This voice said, my son, I'm well pleased with you. If you continue to walk uprightly before me, you will dwell at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Wow.
And then it went back to the speaker's own natural voice. And that is in the film. And if you go to the premiere on the 20th, then you'll see this incredible scene in which I'm there playing George Otis, who was an older man, and then there's a young guy playing me in that same scene.
You don't sound like an older man these days, Mr. Boone, if I may say so.
Well, I don't feel it. In fact, I just am rebooking my trainer at the Equinox so I can get back into the really weekly training sessions I was doing when I broke my hip. And instead of sliding downhill, I'm regaining. And I'm going to be playing golf. I'm already entered in a couple of coming up golf tournaments. And I'm going to get back on the tennis court.
Well,
and
good for
I'm
you.
In the recording studio. As you know, you just heard the song
wrote
and recorded with Mike Lloyd across the street. And the guitarist, by the way, is Lawrence Uber, who was a guitarist for Wings, Paul McCartney.
Wow.
And Thomas, Rosen, who is a harmonica genius, and so because I wanted this song to sound like Dylan, a Dylan like Blowing in the Wind, I didn't want to sound like Dylan myself.
No, I was going to say, you don't want to go there.
Do tell me that they immediately, as I intended, that when they hear this song, which is mainly guitar and harmonica and me, that it should remind them of Blowing in the Wind. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. That song of Dylan's at the time changed a lot of focus in this country toward unity and addressing problems we were sliding into, certainly hatred and prejudice and many other things. Well, we're facing those things again, and we're a country divided, and the Bible and the Reagan and Lincoln all said a nation or a country divided against itself cannot stand. Well, we're almost hopelessly divided with people who disagree politically or otherwise. I mean, we got anti-Semitism sprouting on our on campus and protests in the streets, and if you're on one side politically, then the other side hates you, and we're divided. We've got to come back to the American way of being able to have our public opinions and private views and still be friends and neighbors and fellow Americans and supportive of those policies that are in the Constitution and the Bible that gave us our identity to begin with, reinstated as our principles, because there are movements trying to do away with even God's name on our currency or out of our Pledge of Allegiance.
From your lips to God's ears, please. I'm talking to Pat Boone, and while I've got a moment, I've got to ask you this. The title of the song is Where Did America Go? Mr. Boone, where did it go? I mean, why have things changed so radically, literally, in the last just few years?
Well, America is more an idea and a concept than it's been a country because most of it was generated in our countries and it was by country people. That's why I love to be a country artist and why I have a couple of country hits right now on the charts. Grits is one, and then a new duet with Crystal Gayle of a big hitter of a song she did with Eddie Rabbit years ago, Just You and I, and then a song my musical conductor Dave Siebels wrote called My Stupid Tattoo. And that's in the country charts right now, making fun of that country trademark. But anyway, the idea of the country is more than an idea. It is a philosophy. It is principle that kept us going. And de Tocqueville, the historian, said America is good because America is great. And America, if she ceases to be great, she'll cease to be good.
Absolutely right. That is Pat Boone, the actor, singer, TV personality, 3 movies to his credit this year, and the brand new song, Where Did America Go? Mr. Boone, thank you very much. I so appreciate your time. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Near you.
Bring it.
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network and always glad to take your calls. I want to cite something that comes out of Shift Wa. That's Randy Pebble's political group. He points out that Jay Inslee has this crazy goal. It won't be finished by the time he leaves the governor's office. But if there's any justice, it'll be Dave Reichert in that office and not Bob Ferguson. But his goal is to have fast charging electric car recharging stations every 50 miles along all state highways, a total of 3 million charging ports. But the problem is 1 in 5 of those charging attempts apparently fails. There's a brand new study out of Harvard that says they put in all these electric car chargers and then they become disabled. And I think in many cases, the copper that's inside of them gets stolen by people, you know, many of them drug addicts. So the plan is not going so well. Jay Inslee's goal of having electric car chargers, 3 million of them in the state of Washington. And if you wonder, well, aren't those being paid for by private dollars? They are not. They're paid for the most part, by the federal government. You know, the way we subsidized gas stations at one point, only we didn't do that either. Our X poll today, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? I would answer that one yes. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, we don't often get calls from north of the 49th parallel, but Pasco is on the line from Vancouver, B.C. Hey, Pasco, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you very much, Lars. And, you know, I only have one word to describe your show. Phenomenal.
thank you, sir.
I just wanted to say that, you know, the United States really has to be careful, very careful, or they're going to become what we are today in Canada, where 63 cents out of every dollar is going into the federal government. And they've got all kinds of wacky things going on over here. But as far as Kamala Harris is concerned, she talks about change. She talks about all these different things. She's in office. She has the power to change these things at this particular point. She's also stealing, you know, President Trump's, you already talked about that, is no longer taxing tips. You know, people, I guess the real purpose of my call is people have enough time to watch maybe 20 minutes of the news at 6 o'clock after a long day's work of barely getting by.
Yep.
And they make their judgment on it if they're watching MSNBC or CNN. What I'm asking is take the opportunity, record those shows, watch all of them at the same time, then formulate an opinion based on fact, or you're going to rocket into the poorhouse faster than you could ever imagine. To answer your poll question, of course he should get out of the race. Stolen valor is, I can't think of too many things other than, you know, having a man that's 24 can sleep with a 12-year-old boy in California and not get charged with anything or should be not listed as some sort of a person that is a person of interest. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And what we need is a simple list of truths that people can look at really quickly. I haven't figured out how to do it yet without getting shut down on most social platforms by placing just the truth, because God forbid we pass the truth on to you, you know, your listeners and everybody else.
Nicely
said. Don't be a Democrat. Don't be a Republican. Be a person that is looking at the platform, not the person.
Pasco, look at the platform, but do you remember all the promises Trudeau made to Canada? And then he reneged on them in office, and now Pierre Poilievre is trying to push back on that and say, look, you made all these promises. You haven't fulfilled any of them. You're damaging the country. You're making it impossible to afford a living in Canada. And he's been pushing back hard, and I think that's why Poilievre is so popular.
And I think that Trudeau doesn't believe that, you know, video exists, because all you have to do is go back and you'll find it. And, oh, that's fake news. That never happened. That's AI. It's not AI. I challenge any listener to look up, you know, his view on plastic water bottles. If you find that clip and play it on your station, people will fall out of their chair laughing. You know, he was stuttering and stumbling over these things. We need accountability, people. We need common sense, not fringe ideas. We need real solutions from people that want to get it done. Let's stop with the baloney and let's move on to the real stuff.
And
this show
and
is
by the way,
the only shows in America that are that way.
You know what I'm worried, Pasco? Let me tell you something. One of my colleagues, we've talked to him before, is Mark Stein. He was put on trial in your country for saying things because he disparaged Islam. Well, there are a lot of things about Islam I don't like, and I'll feel free to challenge them. But imagine being threatened with the full force of government to come down on you. And I'll tell you where this is happening today. There's going to be an interview on X that Musk is doing with Trump. And you say, okay, it ought to be an interesting interview. The European Commission is now threatening Musk, saying, if you don't control whatever they call harmful content, meaning information the British government does not agree with, if you don't control that and keep it off of that, they're threatening Musk, and about a third of X is people in Great Britain. So, you know, I worry that someday the Canadian government is going to come along and say, Larson, you're saying things on the radio, and the radio comes into our country, and if you ever come up here, we're going to throw you in jail for the things that you've let people say.
Of course, they're already doing that. In the UK, they just booked someone for 20 months
yep.
for saying something against Islam.
For putting something on social media. Pasco, your calls are welcome anytime. Thanks for the call from north of the 49.
The Lars Larson Show.
15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your phone calls on the Radio Northwest Network. I want to talk to our friend Todd Myers, who's environmental director of the Washington Policy Center, about how the taxpayers are getting fleeced by people in the solar industry, and the numbers just don't pencil out for any of this stuff. And Todd, the longer we go into this and the more we've got sort of established technology. This isn't brand new or, you know, where a technology first becomes available and is extraordinarily, you know, expensive to begin with. Think of, say, desktop computers back in the day where they cost a tremendous amount of money and you didn't get much for it. But after the industry becomes somewhat mature, and I think we could describe that, the car charging industry, the solar panel industry, those are relatively mature industries. It's not as though you're going to see the kind of price reductions in the next, say, 5 or 10 years that we saw in the first few years. And so the gains are going to be much smaller. And in the meantime, the people in the industry are getting rich. Or is that pushing it too far?
No, I think that they are making a very nice living, and they're making it off of getting the taxpayers to pay for things that make really no sense without massive government subsidies. And the latest example is from the city of Tumwater, Washington, which is near Olympia, where they are installing an EV charging station that will cost $100,000. And the key is that it is charged by a solar panel. But the solar panel is relatively small, as you can imagine. And so the result is that in especially the winter months, the number of miles that this can charge is extremely small. So what you're getting for $100,000 is something that on an average January day, the data show can only provide about 26 miles worth of a charge. And all of this at a park, a city park. How many people who own electric vehicles absolutely need to charge their car when it goes to a park? So, you know, this is a frivolous expenditure for people who probably don't need it, of a huge amount of money.
Well, it's funny, Todd, because I have one experience with a house we had some time ago, and it had a fairly large solar panel system on top, and it produces 6 kW on a sunny day. That was the most. And on cloudy winter days, it would produce 3 or 4. You say, what's the significance? The average electric car has about 40 kW in it, but there are a lot of them that are up to 100 kW. But say you've got a 40 kW car, and you say, I've got a solar panel that'll produce 4 kW most of the year. If you say, well, how long is it going to take to charge my car? 10 hours.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but Lars, the sun don't shine for 10 solid hours of good, strong sunshine in January, February, March, and April. Maybe, you know, when you get to July and August, they will. You say, and you're going to have to leave your car plugged into it for 10 hours to get a full charge. None of that makes sense, does it?
No, and that's the thing is that even if, you know, these electric vehicle charging stations are only used once a day, 26 miles in January just makes no sense. In summer, it's more effective at over 100 miles, but even that is a tremendously small amount of miles, assuming that people do it every single day for $100,000. That's the thing. And this is what we, focus on again and again, which is the very people who say that climate change is an existential crisis are very happy to waste a huge amount of money on things that don't work. And this is why, there was a letter that was sent to a reporter who was covering this and from the solar industry in Washington. And they specifically said, I would encourage you to reconsider publishing any statements from the Washington Policy Center or associating with them at all. So they really don't like the fact that I'm pointing out that these are really expensive because, look, they're working very closely with government. They're making a lot of money. And in fact, that same email went on to say, if you want to talk about how great government is doing expending this money, then, quote, let's party. Well, I can understand why they're in a partying mood. They're making a lot of money, but they're not delivering much for the taxpayers.
Well, and I was just pointing out to the audience, Jay Inslee's plan is actually to have 3 million car charging ports in the state of Washington, not nationwide, 3 million of them. And you say, well, why would you need that many? Well, he wants one every 50 miles along every single highway. And most of them are going to have 2 or 3 car charging ports or more, depending on how many people they expect to stop and charge and sit there cooling their heels for 90 minutes to a couple of hours to do it. And then this Harvard study says routinely 20% of the car charging locations don't work. Well, if you had those 3 million ports and 600,000 of them don't work, that doesn't sound like, well, it sounds like a government program to me.
Well, that's right. And it's even worse than that, because the other thing that people say is, oh, don't worry, because the batteries are getting better and the range is getting better for these vehicles. You won't, you won't have to worry about the range. Well, if that's true, then why are we're putting even more charging stations in public when people don't need them? I was telling the story to a friend who has a Nissan Leaf, and he says that the number of times he has charged his Nissan Leaf outside of his home, and the entire time he's owned the car, is less than a handful. We are spending more on charging stations that we're not going to need, and we're not just spending them on things we don't need. We're spending them on the most expensive type, with very ineffective, charged by very ineffective solar panels. It's really a lose-lose, not just for taxpayers, but for the environment.
Well, and Todd, I got an email earlier today from a gentleman who said, Lars, these cars, these EVs are disposable. And he said, what I mean by that is, what's going to happen when the car is 10 or 12 years old and you need a brand new battery? And just to refresh my memory, because the numbers do change occasionally, I said, what would a brand new engine cost for a 10-year-old automobile, assuming you had to replace the entire engine, $3,000 to $4,000? What does a brand new battery cost for a 10-year-old EV? And the range is 6,000 to 20,000 miles. And I thought, I don't know what your friend bought the Leaf for, but say it was $30,000, and say 10 years in, it's still worth, I don't know, $10,000. Are you going to buy a $10,000 battery to put in a car that's only worth $10,000? An insurance company would call that a car that's been totaled, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's people don't realize that there's very high cost down the road. But the way that that's offset is, oh, don't worry, we'll give you more government subsidies for these various things. But the government subsidies for the chargers, to buy the electric vehicles, all these sorts of things, add up to massive amounts of money for very tiny environmental benefit. Meanwhile, we do have real environmental challenges that we could be spending this money on. Instead, we're wasting it on frivolous things like this.
Well, and it just, I wonder what happens when they get to the end and you find out the car you paid so much money for is now a piece of junk. Nobody wants to buy it because you say, hey, I've got a car here. It's probably worth $10,000, but you're going to have to put a $10,000 battery in it. Fine. I'll buy it for $1 because that's the only thing that would make it worth it to put a brand new battery into a car that's now 10 years old and has all the other systems that don't work as well because they're 10 years old. That's Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center. Coming up in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. A lot of people want to talk about Kamala Harris's flip on taxing tips, and the European Commission is threatening the owner of X, Elon Musk, if he airs an interview tonight with Donald Trump. With home.
Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show. And by the way, other than being having an account on X called The Lars Larson Show, we have no other financial connection to Elon Musk or to X. I say that because our question today is, should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? My answer to that would be yes. You can answer the question any way you like. But the European Commission, as of today, is threatening Elon Musk and X with possible legal consequences if he airs an interview that he's done with Donald Trump tonight on X. I'll get into the details of that in just a moment. But if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Russ, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
So I was thinking earlier when you were talking about Kamala Harris stealing Trump's idea for not taxing tips.
Yep.
Do you think it's possible that they could actually implement that, Harris and Biden, before the election? That way Donald Trump doesn't have that to run on. I mean, that's a dirty trick the Democrats would pull.
I think, let me tell you how I think they might be able to do it, Russ. And again, I'm not a lawyer, not an expert in Congress, but here's how I think they could do it. There are, you know, all income in theory is taxable, except there are certain kinds of income that are not taxable. I've never paid alimony in my life, but alimony in under the IRS rules is taxable. So if a man or a woman gets alimony from a former spouse, that's taxable. On the other hand, if a man or woman gets a larger amount in child support after a divorce, that's not taxable income. I checked that because I wanted to use an example. So those, there is both taxable income and untaxable income. On the books, money that you receive, you know, from what you do as your job, in the case of a waiter or waitress, is taxable income. And prior to, I think it was about 1986 when they began to change the rules, check me on that because I think it was 86. They said, we're going to start insisting that people pay taxes on their tips. It's income. But the IRS could say, you know, we're not going to go out and enforce this in any way, like having it on the books, but we don't enforce a rule. In the same sense that a lot of states have a 55-mile-an-hour speeding limit, but if you ask the local cops, they'll say, well, we're not going to tag you unless you're going 5 over or 10 over the limit. So that's an informal unenforcement of the rule. The only problem is the Biden administration, including Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, pushed the IRS to start going with aggressive methods about a year and a half ago when they got all this extra money for the IRS under the Inflation Reduction Act. They said, we're going to go out and go after point of sale with every employer who might have tippable employees so we can track what they might have got in tips. So they've done an aggressive push to collect taxes on tips. And now they could say, well, we're going to back off from that. They couldn't actually change the law without going up on Capitol Hill and having a bill voted on. And at that point, if they did, but there's no time to move a piece of legislation like that between now and the end of the year. And it would be really bizarre if he told the IRS, hey, by the way, remember how we were going to go out and really get aggressive on taxing tips? We're not going to do that now, because they'd have to make it public to get the political plus from doing that. And if they did that, they'd effectively be saying, we're not going to enforce the law.
Right. Well, the point I was trying to make, though, is Trump is trying to run on not taxing tips.
Right.
And, you know, Harris and Biden, if they're like, well, we're not going to enforce this anymore, kudos for us. And they basically just take that off the table for Trump to run on, right?
Except he's going to point out, you guys asked for $80 billion for the IRS. Conservatives opposed it. You ask for 87,000 new IRS agents to chase rich people around. They don't need 87,000 people to tax. Some billionaires. I can't remember the number. It might be 700 billionaires in the whole country. How many agents do you need? If you assign one IRS agent to every single billionaire in America, you'd use up less than 1,000 agents. And as for multi-millionaires, you know, similar numbers.
Maybe they're using all the extra people to think up ways to, you know, screw the Republicans and screw Donald Trump out of, you know, running a good, strong campaign. I mean, they're paying people to just think up stuff to use against us. You know what I mean?
Do you know what I think they're doing? And, Russ, I plan to talk about this more probably tomorrow. Biden said we're going to have a whole-of-government approach to signing people up to vote. And he said, well, what does that mean? Well, I found out some of it over the weekend. I found some good reporting on this. They're now telling doctors and nurses and other health professionals who work in public health clinics, we want you to sign people up to vote, which seems kind of bizarre. You'd think those in
talking about that the other day.
Well, and here's the thing that's weird. If you did a demographic study and said, who is it that mostly uses low income and or government subsidized health care? Well, that would be poorer people in America and probably a large group of people of color, Hispanic and black voters. And so are those people likely to vote Democrat or Republican? Many of them will vote Democrat rather than Republican.
Yep.
So when they say we want all these public health clinics to sign people up to vote, if they can get a couple of extra million people signed up to vote who are inclined to vote Democrat, they're not going to tell the doctors to identify them as Democrats or Republicans. You've already self-selected. The same way if I was trying to get an initiative passed and I said, well, where should I go to get signatures? The Sportsman Show or should I go to the Hippy Dippy Show? And you say, go to the Sportsman Show. That's where you're going to find all the, you know, right-wing Republicans. And you say, I'm not going to find many liberals at the Sportsman Show. Probably not. You know, you could find one or two, but not likely. But you're right. They could try to steal a beat, but it's such a transparent move to say you wanted more IRS agents, you wanted a tax tip income, and now all of a sudden you say you're against taxing income. All the Democrats have really succeeded in doing is convincing everybody that they are first class hypocrites. Now, Russ, thanks for the call. Let me mention this. The European Commission has now sent a letter to the owner of X, Elon Musk, saying we may have legal consequences for you if you decide to air an uncensored interview with Donald Trump. You say, well, what could he possibly say? What they've told Musk is that unless you control harmful content that may be in that interview, you know, I thought the best response came from one of the top execs at X. It's a young lady. And what she said is, look, You're not trusting that people can just watch an interview and draw their own conclusions about it. That's exactly what they're doing. The European Commission for the Internal Market, one of the world's most aggressive tech regulators, warned Musk that his planned Monday night interview with Trump could violate the Digital Services Act if it does not limit the spread of certain forms of online speech. This is the kind of garbage that goes on in a place that doesn't have the First Amendment, where government is told to stay out of it. And this is something Americans should be aware of, because there are people in this country, including the Democrat Party, who want to see more of that.
The Lars Larson Show.
Elon Musk sums up America's government.
And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I haven't talked to my friend Adam Carolla in a long, long time. But he's the guy who hosts one of the most successful podcasts in the world. And there are about 800,000 or 900,000 podcasts in the world. So being at the top of that list is something big. Adam, welcome back.
Good to talk to you, Lars.
Why are Democrats, who usually are all or have been in past decades all about civil rights, individual rights, and the rest, how is it that they so readily adopt a candidate like that?
I don't know. I mean, I think
in any relationship, whether it's Republican or Democrat, or husband and wife, when they're going through a rough patch, at a certain point, one accuses the other of change, right? They go, you've changed, you know, and then they go, you've changed. And, you know, I come from a long line of really progressive California Democrats. And so I'm old enough to remember and kind of understand it and bring receipts. And if someone says to me, I've changed, I haven't. I've always been for civil liberties. I've always been for free speech. I've never been, you know, I never wanted to criminalize marijuana or gay marriage or any of that stuff. I just wanted a smaller government, essentially. And my mom, who've been an old hippie from California and a lifelong Democrat, she would have hated the CIA and the FBI. She didn't trust the CIA and the FBI. She didn't trust the government. She didn't trust big government at all. She wouldn't have been for any of this new stuff that's coming out of her party.
Do the Democrats and the liberals, I mean, I find that if you call somebody a conservative, they'll say, damn right. But if you accuse them of being a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive, they eschew all those accusations, say, no, I'm really not that. But I just wonder if they see what it's doing to places like California, which I understand you're planning to leave as a result of it becoming so toxic. Do they understand that this is making some of the best places in America so toxic that people who can afford to leave are simply leaving?
It's a very vexing question, because once every year and a half, Gavin Newsom will look around and go, what's going on around here? This place is a mess. You know what I mean? He'll say it out loud, and it's like, what's going on? You have a supermajority, and we've implemented all your policies, and this is what it's yielded. I don't know what else to tell you. But it is an interesting phenomenon, and if you really think about it, it's kind of an interesting sort of mind puzzle, which is Walls and Kamala Harris, they explain that they're progressive and they're proudly progressive, and they run on all these very, they discuss all these very progressive notions, and then it comes time to get on the national stage and they walk everything back. What is it about your notions that you think the American people don't like, and then why are you walking them back? And what is it about the Democrats who talk, you know, all about the transgender and the tampons and the boys' room and everything, and then all of a sudden they get on a national stage and they're like, oh, no, I didn't mean any of that stuff. So they realize they can't win on their crazy agenda, so they change. But the analogy is this. It's basically, and I think this is kind of an Obama thing. They say, what do you want, Americans? I'm the cook. What do you want? And America goes, we want mac and cheese and hot dogs. That's what we like the most. And Obama goes, okay, I'll give you mac and cheese and hot dogs. That's what you'll get if you elect me. And then we elect him. And then he goes, now it's my kitchen. And I'm going to the kitchen, and I'm making a goat cheese souffle. And people go, well, wait a minute. That's not what people ask for. Don't worry about what those idiots ask for. I'm a 5-star rated Michelin chef. I think I know what I'm doing. And by the way, I didn't get this job to hand dumb people hot dogs. I'm going to give them the goat cheese souffle. They're going to learn to like it, believe me. And then nobody likes it. And they go, well, I need a little more money, a little better funding, and a little more goat cheese. And people are like, that's not what you said you were going to do. We wanted hot dogs and mac and cheese. It's like, anyone can hand that crap out to dumb people. I am a master chef, and I'm doing what I'm going to do. And that's going to be windmills and clinics so that people can transition in their teens, set up in the parking lot of Dodger Stadium.
I'm talking to Adam Carolla from the Adam Carolla Show, the number one downloaded podcast in the world. Is that why they're hiding her? Because they know she's not as clever as Obama and can't sell this to the public?
Yes. Obama was a Michelin-rated chef and a thespian, and he could talk his way out of his bad ideas. And she can't talk her way out of her bad ideas. But it's also, it's an interesting conceit. All these ideas are from the left. And so here is the task or the question to the American people. You go, look, there's all these ideas are on the far left. Yes. Do you like any of the ideas? No. All right. But you will elect someone from the left who just promises not to do the ideas of their party, right? They go, yeah, I'll do that. Well, okay, but why not get somebody else? I mean, we know what they want to do. And by the way, they said what they wanted to do. And the thing that's funny about Biden or Harris or Walz or any of these people, you know, when they were getting into it a couple of weeks ago with Josh Shapiro over an article that he wrote when he was 20 about Israel and Palestine and all that stuff that he had to walk back, he got to say, I was 20 when I wrote that article and I'm 54 now, so I'm different. These proclamations that Joe Biden was making or Kamala Harris, or Joe Biden, half the stuff he said in his 70s, he had to walk back. Kamala Harris, when she was talking about all this crap, Kamala Harris is about to turn 60. She said this crap when she was 56 and a half. these are not childish ways. This is what you think. I'm the same age as Kamala Harris. I think exactly how I thought 5 years ago today. I would not walk back. It's like you full indiscretion. You guys are in your 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah, it doesn't work to use the youthful indiscretion excuse. I understand you're coming up to my neck of the woods to help some people raise some money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I'm told you're coming up to Linn County, Oregon, which is a great, it's the GOP. They say that that you're coming up for an evening and to do a show and talk at a fundraiser. If that's not accurate, I'll be happy to correct it, Adam. But I just wanted to give them a little plug.
I thought I was coming up and doing stand-up, but maybe there's something more to it. I got to check my calendar.
Isn't that exactly what we're talking about? The stand-up, it all works out to the same thing. It's just that I do a talk show and I'm not funny. You do a talk show and you're funny and informative, which, you know, you've got one up on me there. But I wanted to mention this for this little group that the Linn County GOP, a very embattled group because it's a rural part of the Pacific Northwest. The problem is they've got a major university there. So you're a rural county with a major liberal influence right in the middle.
That is a turd in the punch bowl.
Adam, thank you very much. That's Adam Carolla. And yes, he is coming up to the Pacific Northwest. Do a fundraiser for the Linn County GOP September 7th in Albany, Oregon at the Linn County Expo Center. And you can get your tickets, and that includes dinner at LinnLaughs.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio North.
Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. 25 years of serving the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And you're invited to the conversation at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the Regenerative Medical Specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. And our ex-poll question today, and I got a very interesting email, or I think a very typical email about this. Should Governor Tim Walz drop out as a VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? Now, has he been accused of those crimes? No. Has he been convicted of those crimes? No, he has not. but do I believe that he has committed the federal crime of stolen valor? It was passed into law by the U.S. Congress in 2006. He became a member of Congress in 2007. So there have been a few people who've emailed me and said, well, Tim Walz voted on that law. He couldn't have. He took office as a member of Congress in 07. The law was passed in 06. But should he drop out as a VP nominee over this stolen valor question, which is not going away? If anything, it seems to be getting worse. And what did he do? Number one, he has claimed the entire time he was a member of Congress, the entire time he has been governor of Minnesota, and at least for about a week as a VP nominee, that he was a retired command sergeant major. And he was not. He ended his service as a master sergeant, which is a couple of ranks down. So the question is, what did he commit a crime? Well, the federal stolen valor statute says it's a misdemeanor crime to either pretend you have been in the military when you have not, or to enhance your resume in the military by claiming a rank that you did not achieve. Governor Tim Walz has done that, and I think he should answer that question. Instead, most of the legacy media is simply trying to make excuses and say, well, this is being misinterpreted, et cetera, et cetera. The same media that will go after Donald Trump or J.D. Vance, hammer and tong for anything, is now trying to ignore the fact that Tim Walz claims that military service. Number one, claims a rank he did not achieve. That's one. Number two, and not listed as stolen valor, but when he has over the years been introduced as somebody who served in combat under fire, and he had not. He, in fact, left his unit right before they were about to be deployed to Iraq, and he left his unit without a senior non-commissioned officer, a senior NCO, and somebody else who was not originally going to be deployed had to volunteer to serve in his stead. And why did he leave? Why did he decide to leave the military early before his commitment was up, a commitment he made on September the 18th, 2001, just about a week after the terrorist attacks on America? He'd already done 20 years in the National Guard. He went back and reenlisted because of 9/11. And he said he wanted to do six more years. He did just over 3.5 years, and then he left. Now, does that make sense? Does that smell right to you? It doesn't smell right to me. And then he claimed a rank. As a member, as a guy running for Congress, we actually ran a soundbite. In fact, Joel, if you've got that soundbite handy, Joel is my producer, one of my three producers. If we have that soundbite handy, I want you to hear it from his mouth. He was running for the United States Congress. He won his seat in the United States Congress, and this is the way he introduced himself.
I'm Tim Walz, and I'm running for Congress in Minnesota's 1st Congressional District. I'm a retired command sergeant major.
And that is specifically untrue, and under federal law, that is a crime. So, should Governor Walz drop out as a VP nominee? And my answer would be yes. Today's X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, let me tell you about this email. Very nice guy wrote to me. Doesn't write very, in fact, I don't know if I've seen his signature before, but DJ Freeman wrote in and he said, Lars, I found you are one of not the only one of the best on the radio. Thank you for that. Help me understand your thinking on this. I understand the stolen valor by Walz. That's the misdemeanor crime he has committed. He has never been charged with the crime, and it follows he has never been convicted of the crime. That is all true. Trump has been tried and convicted for felony crimes. Yes, the convictions are on appeal. If Walz should be removed for the minor crime he has not been charged with, shouldn't it be reasonable for Trump to step down until the appeals process is complete? Here's my answer. Trump, and this is what I wrote back to DJ, Trump was convicted of a fraud where, number one, there was no victim, never identified at the trial. Number two, there was no loss of money. In fraud, ordinarily, you get, you know, somebody who's lost money. There was no loss of money. And the folks who would have been the victims, if there had been any, were quoted as saying they wanted to do business again with Donald Trump, the man convicted of defrauding them. They said, no, we do business with him again in a heartbeat. Walz committed an uncharged federal misdemeanor. The emailer is right. He's never been charged with stolen valor, although the issue has come up over the years. And the victims were the voters. He told the voters, I'm a retired command sergeant major. That was not true. They elected him to Congress. They didn't know the truth. They elected him to governor. They didn't know the truth. And now a VP candidate who wants their votes, if he's not telling them the truth, I would call the victims, the voters, the victims in that case. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.